probably weren't able to put it together because it's such an unknown. And I'm not going to ask you to present that to us, but that certainly is a big part of as we move forward. If we don't do the expansion, there's going to be some savings there because we apply for the waiver if we're successful, correct?
There will be some, and there will be some savings for those people between 100 and 138% of the poverty level. But we're going to have to start working with the mental health organizations so we have a better tracking of clients, and so we can cross-check to see if, in fact, we're not paying twice for it.
So when you did the no expansion costs and offsets, you really didn't include anything, correct? If you don't know what it is, you probably didn't include it, so you didn't include it.
No, and there was a number of things that we didn't include there that we think there will be other savings in other parts of state government, prisons, and others that there are. We didn't factor in that. We didn't factor in any savings basically through the hospitals and where they're because of the uncompensated care. The other thing, we factored those costs based on the traditional Medicaid program. And under HHS, they're giving us the ability to have a non-traditional Medicaid program for this expansion group, particularly those people between 100 and 138, be more like a state employee health insurance program, or where there are co-pays and basically cost sharing, and it's significantly different than the traditional Medicaid, and I think it will probably end up being less costly. But again, we didn't factor in all those potential additional savings. We wanted something pretty hardcore in case we were challenged to say, this is what we can do. We think there's more, but I don't want to put it down and absolutely guarantee it to you today. But I think there is more potential than what's showing on that sheet.
Okay, and of course, even if we don't do the expansion, Senator Scott's bill passes and we get into that, we won't really know for a while. I think we can make an assumption that it'll be a savings. So, and it could be substantial. We just don't know, and I understand that. Okay, on the WLRC, you know, there's a bill out there to look at that, and I haven't really studied the bill, but the intention and you're supporting that bill. That's my first question.
Senator, yes. What, frankly, that facility, as well as other facilities that under our jurisdiction, I think need to be looked at and need to be looked at closely to see if, in fact, we can squeeze efficiencies out of it. That bill, contrary to what some people believe, is not a bill to close that facility. It's the idea is to take a look at it and see if, in fact, we can save money. Either at the facility by transitioning some people out of it, but also looking at what we can do to improve the operations. It was pretty narrowly focused after amendments yesterday. It was broadened. Now it's going to be at the Senate. But conceptually, yeah, I think we should be looking at Life Resource Center as well as our other facilities.
And I agree. I think you need to, there's nothing wrong with doing that to see if we can do it more efficiently. We got like 450 people providing services to 92 or 93, and I don't think it's been had a hard look at it for a while. So I support that, but I just wanted to be sure that, and I thought that was the intention of the bill, was to see how we could do things rather than a move to we're just going to start shutting it down. I don't think that's appropriate, and that's what you're saying, so I appreciate that. The other thing is on the vaccine, we talked, it's like $2.4 million. And last year we turned that down, and you made a pretty good argument that we really need to do that this year. We've fallen behind on that, have we not?
Yes, we have. In fact, if this is not funded, then we're going to be dropping another vaccine within the next 60 to 90 days because of the we're running out of money. We didn't get funded last session, and so we've held on with what we have right now with the idea that we would see what happens this session. If we don't get the funding, then we will drop the pneumococcus.
And that's not just children. That's for That's broad for the whole state, correct, that vaccine cost component?
That is for non-federally supported children.
Yeah, it's, non-federally supported children.
Yes.
And Senator Perkins, help me, isn't there about 200,000 vaccines we gave?
Report, I think it was something like, anyway, it was, the number was just striking. It was like 240,000 vaccines were
trying
given
to see how
year.
Many.
We were trying to, it was a phenomenal number considering that we probably have less than 100,000 children in the state. So anyway, it was a number that jumped out at us out of this one.
Help us out.
It'll be,
is it several vaccines, like three or four or five different ones? Is
yes,
that what it is?
It's multiple vaccines.
Okay.
And so it's the battery of vaccines that children have to have to and go into the school systems.
And I had a note on the PRTF, and we're still moving ahead on that, correct?
PRTFs, it came out of House Judiciary yesterday.
Okay.
And that's the situation that is essentially all Medicaid is the bank. And under this issue, we are the bank, and basically people are withdrawing from the bank, and there's no deposits going into it. So either we have to stop the withdrawals, or we have to have a deposit coming in. And that's why we have the request for money to put it into because of the outflow.
Okay, the only last thing, Mr. Co-Chair, is, you know, as we look forward to the next biennium, I mean, we're having, you know, these are very, very difficult decisions we're making now. That's going to be exacerbated when we come back and look at potentially 8%. And we just need to, we really need to be working with you, Tom, because you are the 800-pound gorilla in our budget. And I want 46, 48, 49%, and that's without the Medicaid expansion. So it's a big-ticket item. And I think that's it for me right now, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me. Hopefully that the report that we provided to you was of help you understanding our situation.
You know, and I, Mr. Co-Chair, I really appreciate that because, you know, it's rather than us try to tell you what to do, it's your department. You tell us what you think, and then of course, we get the big bucks to make the decision. But it's only if you give us the right information, and I'm sure you understand how that works. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Stubson, I think, is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Director Forslund, as part of our handouts today, we received this list of statutes that need to be changed in order to implement the 2014 cuts. And I just want to make sure that I understand. As you mentioned earlier, these aren't proposed cuts. These are cuts that have been approved and are in the budget going forward. But do I understand that even though we have adopted the cuts, that in order to actually to implement them, to utilize them, we have to make these statutory changes that you guys have listed out?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, you need to give us the authority to do that, either through statutory change or through some type of footnote. And because we had some discussion at joint labor this summer, and I think it was dealing with the preschools, and they went through the list and they told us we didn't have the authority to make these cuts. And we said, well, the AG has said we do. And so it was kind of a tug of war. And ultimately they said, this needs to be brought back to the legislature. So you've asked us to cut. We're planning on cutting, but I don't want to be told now is, well, you don't have the authority to do that. So it's, you know, so we present it to you, and hopefully it can be addressed so I don't have other legislators saying I don't have the authority to do it.
Senator Meyer. A couple of things. First, when the governor was here, he really wasn't aware of your 15-16 cuts. I hadn't dug that deep into some of the 15-16 budgets. Have you had the opportunity since his address to inform him of all of your 15-16 cuts or intentions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, we have gone through the cuts, but the issue, and you folks, I think, were struggling with it in December the same way I think the governor was, is 14 15-16. And so we have reviewed 14, 15, and 16 with the governor. But I think his focus as he was developing the budget was on
the biennium.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I certainly understand that. There's no problem there, but he's aware of the some of the cuts that we're looking at here. Corrections in other areas have been able to make substantial reductions in the substance abuse budgets, and I think it's primarily perhaps the legislature overreacted and put a lot more funds out there than thought the problem was bigger than what it actually turned out to be. Are we going to be able to think that the substance abuse problem in Wyoming is leveled off, or do you have any feel for that? And can we have some cuts there without necessarily impacting the legislative efforts or their goals, rather?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, there has been a significant commitment by this body to provide funding for mental health and substance abuse in recent years. And we're asking those questions of the providers is what outcomes are we getting as a result of this significant increase? And we're just starting to generate data. We have not got it from the last 5, 6, 7 years, but if you're making, as I've challenged some of the providers, I said, you know, we put in a lot of money as a state to this issue. What have we gotten as a result of it? And you have to present some outcomes to show, and we're moving down that road, but I can't produce it today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr.
I got two other quick ones, and I apologize. The first one is, and I was talking to Senator Scott about this a little bit, and he may have visited with you, Tom, but and certainly in other areas of the federal overreach, we're experiencing a lot of things going on that's really have a negative impact on our state. And as I understand the ACA and the rules that are coming out, and I know the governor has written several letters to the director of that or the head of that to ask him, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? And hasn't had a response. No surprise. As these come out and rolling out, a lot of those could have a real negative impact on our state. There are time limits when you respond to those, i.e. with your comments, and let them know, not that they will ever pay any attention to what we say, but hopefully they would. We're thinking about a mechanism to put in place to say, okay, when all these rules come out on the ACA, Medicaid expansion, all the different things, that you have an opportunity and to look at those and comment. And we can even have the legislature involved in the comments, work with our congressional delegation. What are your thoughts on that?
Senator, certainly I think it's very appropriate for the state of Wyoming to provide its comments on proposed rules and regulations coming out of Washington and particularly related to the ACA. One of the things that has happened is that HHS has been putting out guidelines in recent months and recent weeks. In fact, what I was just telling you a few minutes ago about giving us more flexibility with the expansion group than we've had with the traditional Medicaid program, that has just been released in recent weeks. And so, you know, you've got that whole rulemaking process they go through, then ultimately they put it into place. So in terms of making comments during the rulemaking process, I'd be supportive of that. But secondly, as the governor and other governors have been asking questions, HHS has been formulating the rules and guidelines and have been issuing it almost on a weekly basis. And so some things the governor has asked for, HHS just had not been put the rules out before. We're starting to see them now.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Co-Chair, and that's just something I wanted to look at. And, of course, I think there are 30 states, now 29 because Arizona decided to do the expansion a couple of days ago. The governor down there did, but, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are going just through. We do all the dynamics of Wyoming are probably as unique as anything, so thank you.
Senator Hastert, did you?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Director Forsland, Tom, my understanding is that if we implement, when we implement, I should say, if the mandatory portions of Medicaid don't do the expansion, is it correct to say that that's actually going to cost the state money? That's the first part of my question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, that is correct. We will be seeking, and this is the first year that we're doing that, we will be seeking additional funding to pay for that required population, which is approximately, 10,600 people.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that, so I as I heard you say that, I know that other legislators, and I believe the co-chair was talking about some measures that the chairman of the labor, Senator Scott, was bringing forward, and uncertain as to whether those measures were going to actually save the state, and as what I understood you to say is that you really couldn't comment because at this point you really didn't know and you didn't study. So it's you know, there may not be a savings, there may be a savings, but it's really, and it may cost us, but, and you just don't know at this point. Is that
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, I guess I want to separate it. Some of the discussions we've had this morning regarding the Medicaid reform bill, we're absolutely convinced it will generate savings for us over short term and long term. But related to some specifics to the Medicaid population that's coming on board, those numbers are, in terms of mental health, I can't answer that specific today, but the reform bill, I think, is a excellent bill, and it's a result of all last year's work, and I would certainly support that highly, strongly, I should say.
Okay, any other members? Many? Anything else? Any other comments or anything else? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll wrap it up by I'll encourage you once again to consider the alternate budget proposal that I presented to you in December. I think it's a good way for the Department of Health to go, and it addresses, I think, concerns that this legislature has about ever-increasing costs, and it's an attempt by this 800-pound gorilla of health to address your concerns.
Okay. Thank you, and appreciate your testimony this morning. Okay, next up is the Insurance Department. Director Hersig. Morning, Director. I'm not sure that we have a big agenda. I think more probably to talk about if there's. I think we were getting into questions one and two about the exchange last time, if my memory serves me. And so I think, are there any any real questions. We kind of had to cut that short here last time. But are there really any questions about how an exchange would work and the cost of those kind of things? Because really that's going to be our big decision, I think. And so go ahead, committee, anything you have. Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I don't know that we really got into the point that that it's still very unsettled out there whether we're going to need to fund this or not, if you could kind of follow up for the committee on that.
Mr. Chairman, first I'd like to start with, I've been in insurance my whole career, so I'm used to when you bring up insurance, everybody walking out of the room. Senator Dockstetter, you know, there's still a lot of things that aren't well defined in the ACA, to the point that making a real sound business decision of what roles we want to take on, I'm just not sure that the absolute regulation is out there to make a clear-cut decision.
Mr. Chairman, and that's the difficult part we have with this part of the budget. We have this thing that's out there pending, and we don't know how to prepare for it. Could be a year, could be a little more than a year. All of a sudden, we could have it now. It's just, it's pending.
Well, it's hard, I think, Senator Dockstetter, and as pure appropriators, you think, gosh, why wouldn't we expand? I mean, just looking at the bottom line, but a lot of other issues, too, we're trying to contemplate. But anything else? Any other questions? Senator Meyer.
I'm just trying to look about how the exchange would actually work if it was just Wyoming-based or whether we went with the national exchange. Frankly, I don't see any companies beating the door down to join a Wyoming exchange, and I doubt if it would add any competition whatsoever in an insurance marketplace. Would that be a fair analysis?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the discussion about exchanges really gets muddled in the fact that there is way more to an exchange than just being able to purchase the product. We talk about analogies all the time. We're almost going from a Burger King where you can order whatever you want, how you want it, to a McDonald's where the exchange part of it is just where you step up and you buy the product, okay, where you buy your Big Mac or whatever you order. But there are so many things behind the scenes that come into this. All the ingredients of making that sandwich come in there. And basically what is happening is the federal government is dictating all that. So if you want to, if the state wants to take the exchange part, all we're going to be is up there in the uniform saying, here's what we have to offer. Here's your Big Macs. Here's all that. Where the real guts of the whole thing comes in is behind the scenes. So to have the discussion about an exchange, it's hard you really need to differentiate. The exchange part of it is nothing more than just a place where, like e-health, where you go online and you shop for your health insurance. Where the effects come into the consumers is all those ingredients that go into that behind. Just to let you know what the Department of Insurance is doing right now, we have calls weekly with the federal government trying to explain to them the nuances of Wyoming and how unique we are and trying to help them at least try to develop some sort of measures that can mitigate some of the effects of this exchange coming into Wyoming. And as a department, you know, we're just kind of focused on, it looks like the federal exchange is coming, and so that's where our focus is right now. But just to let you know, other states that have decided to go state-based exchange or partnership exchanges, boy, they're having way more troubles than we are right now. They thought they were going to get some flexibility by moving that direction, and the flexibility does not appear to be there according to what other states are going through.
That flexibility, probably some control too. I mean, the control to make some of these decisions.
Right. Mr. Chairman, for example, one of the functions in a partnership model where you basically partner with the federal government and you take some of those behind-the-scene roles on about, you know, putting the secret sauce on or, you know, very limited roles. One of them is plan management. And plan management is basically the insurance companies send their plans into the state of Wyoming. We would take over that function and certify them as qualified health plans that would be eligible to go in the exchange, and also plans that are just meet essential health benefits that could be marketed outside of the exchange. But what states are finding out now is what the federal government's saying is you can do that, but they also need to send them to us, and so they're ultimately going to make that decision.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah. And Director, thanks for kind of telling us how the exchanges work. It's probably pretty much like the EPA rules on water primacy. It's, you know, the rules are going to be the same whether Wyoming has primacy or the federal government has primacy, and that's the backroom stuff that you were talking about on how the sandwich is made, is that's not going to change whether we hire Wyoming employees or federal employees. It's the rules are pretty much going to be set, and that's going to be the way it is. I'm just trying to determine whether or not there's any advantage to the consumer as to whether or not it's an exchange operated by federal employees or an exchange operated by Wyoming employees, one way or the other, and whether or not companies would actually indeed come from that are not currently located within the state, currently don't have your insurance department's blessing. And I guess that's another question, is that do they even need your blessing to operate in the state? And kind of going on here and rambling, if you can kind of log all these questions, is that insurance premiums, and the taxes that are accrue to them currently go back to the state for most things. I'm assuming the federal government's going to grab a hold of those in some way, shape, or form. I'm just trying not having read that, just wondering what you could tell us about the general implementation, the tax premiums, whether or not we got any competitive advantage or consumer advantage, any specific things that we might be able to have the benefit of your work there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, we do have numerous talks with industry trying to they're trying to get their heads around this thing too, and they can't give much answers as far as to date, because regulations are not final. They're just guessing at what premiums could possibly do to the state of Wyoming, whether they're actually going to do business in the state of Wyoming. There is certainly no guarantee that even if an exchange was built, that a company may not participate in that exchange. We've heard companies that say maybe they can develop a product outside the exchange that, even though you don't get a subsidy or a tax credit, could be more competitive with things inside the exchange. There is, you know, they're guessing as much as we are, if not more, because typically an insurance company to file a plan, to get a plan put together, they need about 12 to 17 months to put a plan together. Well, the regulations are not even out. They have to have their plans in there March 1 through the end of June. Their plans to get on the exchange have to be in. So they're... It's hard to get a concrete feel for what's going to happen. It really is. I wish I could help. My crystal ball is a little cloudy.
I think any other questions to kind of wrap it up? Senator Perkins, because we've got YDOT still. That's the 500-pound gorilla.
Mr. Chairman?
I'll.
No, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to address, I forgot about the premium taxes. There's nothing been promulgated yet as far as premium taxes. Those should be received by the state. I guess the question the department's tossed around is, with the subsidies and other things that are going to be out there, is that going to reduce our premium taxes that we can collect? Will we be able to collect off that portion? That's probably the question that we've tossed around a little bit. And I would like to clarify one thing. Last time I was here, we were talking about interstate sales of insurance and the premium taxes there. We will be eligible to get the premium taxes if the interstate sales goes through, and I apologize for giving some misinformation there.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, appreciate you being here, and I know you're kind of backing up Director Forson too, and you guys appreciate the information on this issue. So, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair.
Co-Chair. You probably heard the conversation I had with Director Forslund about the rules and regulations coming out. If we have some kind of a footnote that kind of directs and supports you him doing that, how would you feel about doing the same for the insurance department relative to the ACA? Would you have any trouble with that as these rules come out, trying to figure out how to help you so we can analyze them and make sure we're doing the right thing for Wyoming?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be very beneficial to our department to have some clarification of the role that we were to take.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Director. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Mr. Director, we're just a few minutes behind schedule, but I'm sure you'll bring us in by 10 o'clock, depending on how our questions go. You pretty much know the drill, so if you gentlemen would take us through your budget, I think we've got them all in front of us. Any other documents you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. Mr. Chairman, just quickly, what I'd like to do is introduce our staff that we have here with us. You all know, I think, Dale McComey, Chief Engineer with the Department, Kevin Hibbert, our Budget Officer, Dennis Byrne is our Aeronautics Administrator, Tom Lofton is our Support Services Administrator, and significance of Tom, among several other programs that he oversees, is the Motor Vehicle Services, Fuel Tax Administration, and also the Driver Services. So kind of the DMV.
Where we get our most emails.
Certainly echoed by ours and the Governor's Office, I understand. John Butler is the Colonel and Administrator of the Wyoming State Highway Patrol. Kenny Schultz is the Assistant Chief Engineer for Operations. WildLink questions will probably be deferred to him. Greg Frederick, I think Greg's here, isn't he? Greg's not here. Okay. And then Sandy Scott is our Commission Secretary, Transportation Commission Secretary, and also our staff legislative coordinator. Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is just take you straight to the document for our agency. And just by way of very brief preface, I'm gonna page through the first part of this booklet or your document there in fairly rapid form. But if you look at page 3, page 3 is the summary, supplemental request by the agency. If you look at column 3, it's the proposed 8% reduction, and you'll also see over in column 6 the reflection of the governor's response to that. And I'll get to some detail, but you'll see that the proposed cuts of 8% as instructed by the legislature and the governor's office and ANI to the agencies were to be 8% of our standard, our general fund standard appropriation. We did that going straight across the board, and I'll comment a little bit on that as I go through the budget. And you'll also see that the governor recommended a slightly lower cut that comes in about 6.3%. If you look at column 5, you see the supplemental budget request for the agency. And I'm turning to page 5 now. Looking at page 5, and I'm not going to spend any time on this, but if you look at the bottom half of that page, it's just the basic facts and the basic kind of sub-agencies and the responsibilities of the Wyoming Department of Transportation as it was formed in 1991 under reorganization. Continuing then to, I'm on page 11, and if there's any questions about anything in between that I'm skipping over, we would be happy to entertain those. On page 11 is the department priorities in the supplemental budget request for this session. You'll see that priority number one is surface transportation projects. We requested $50 million. Priority number two is WildLink software version updated. And I'm going to go into just a little bit of detail because I know that particularly with respective to WildLink, one question that we virtually always get in the Joint Appropriations Committee is how long is this going to go on? And is this system ever going to be completed? And how does this interact with it? And we definitely want to respond thoroughly and hopefully satisfactorily to those questions. But the prefacing comment that I'll make about WildLink, and then we'll get into it when we get to that page, is that the WildLink system could best be described. The build-out of the system is virtually complete, almost, with the exception of a few towers, and that would be the WIDART role in that. The system itself, a radio system, a public safety radio system itself, could be best described, at least in terms that I can understand, as a computer system that has to be upgraded hardware-wise and software-wise as time goes on, and that request that we will talk about in a few minutes here is reflective of that. Of that ongoing reality. Page 12 is our 8% general fund reduction priorities. There was a footnote in this past session's budget bill that instructed the Department of Transportation to not fill any cuts in the upcoming budgets from other sources within the general fund appropriation. So, reflecting that instruction, our proposed cuts that were sent to the governor's office, totaling $2.592 million, were straight across the board, 8% from T1 communication lines, which is a part of the WildLink project, airport improvement grants, air service enhancement grants, and we can get into any requisite detail on these issues as we go. Air service enhancement professional services, which is the administrative overhead for that program. And then finally, the big ticket item, that being highway improvements. On the right-hand column of page 12, you'll see that the governor's recommendations to this committee went from $2.6 million down to a little over $2 million. And in so doing, he held harmless the airport improvement grants and the air service enhancement grants. Those two recommendations for an 8% cut were zeroed out. So the math on that, we recommended 8% as instructed, and it comes down to about 6.3, just over 6% in the governor's recommendations to the legislature. Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 14, and if I'm going too rapidly here, I'm trying to get you caught up, but if there's any questions, please let me know. I'm on page 14 and 15. Column 4 is the IT consolidation figures. On page 15 is an accounting of the position numbers that were moved from YDOT to Enterprise Technology Services to the new agency.
I think we understand the WildLink issues, and if you have any real unique, I don't think you have any contested issues.
Okay.
It's mainly these budget cuts. Senator Meyer,
Well, Mr. Chairman, I see the verbiage over on 15, but I'm looking for the positions actually to come out of column 4. Everything stays at 142. I think in most of these we'd see a reduction of how many positions they were, and so you'd get down to, you know, 120 something. Am I reading that wrong, or?
Mr. Chairman, I think that what you see reflected there is the fact that once the whatever appropriate enabling legislation is passed, the because of the difference in budgeting models, I'll ask Kevin to correct me if I'm wrong, but this will be the expenses will be paid to ETS by YDOT based on services rendered on a billing model. If you look on at the bottom of page 15, the commentary there, about halfway down, ETS is proposing to transfer. That paragraph talks about a billing model. Kevin, did I cover that?
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Hibbert, Budget Officer for the Wyoming Department of Transportation. I believe Senator Meyer's question relates to why isn't there a reduction when there's an increase? The reduction will take place in the Transportation Commission's budget. So we will reduce the costs associated with these positions in the Transportation Commission budget and then move those over to the legislative budgets in 0400, 0407, and therefore pay the new ETS agency for those positions.
Okay, I think it's coming clear now. All these IT positions are in the commission budget, not the administrator support budget.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and we don't even get a look at the commission budget.
We're working on that too, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Here in September next year. Or we might not go home, one or the other. But
Well, we'll spend all the time that you guys want us to.
Okay, carry on there. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 16. Reflected there is statewide cost clearing, including ANI and the Office of Administrative Hearings. Page 17 is WildLink and SALEX, which is the State Agency Law Enforcement Communication System. I'm on page 18 and 19, where is found the description of the WildLink request, the detail associated with that. If you look on page 19, you see that $306,000 of that is under other funds. Those are transportation funds. YDOT is about a 17% at the 17.8, I think actually is the number, percent user of the WildLink system. And so what we're doing is proposing that we pay 20% of the cost for this upgrade. So this is just us ponying up transportation funds appropriate to the level, commensurate with the level of our use of the system. Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 21, report improvements. Before I leave this page, I'm going to offer something that is a little bit outside the exact discussion of the supplemental request, but I want to point something out on page 21. If you look in the third box down, where it says highway funds, and then you see an $8.7 million figure. I just want to describe what that reflects just quickly for the, particularly perhaps for the newer members of this committee. In the early 2000s, I think it was in the 2001 session, Director Sleater-Dover and the commission and the governor approached the legislature about appropriating highway funds for airport improvements. Now, strictly speaking, when we're talking about surface transportation, the highway system, we're talking about that which belongs to the state. With respect to the airports around the state, that is not a state-owned asset, but the state has had a historic role in helping to maintain and improve the airports, which is part of the transportation system and certainly part of the mandate of the Transportation Department. So consistent with that, the director then and the governor and the commission approached the legislature about appropriating $8.7 million for airport improvements. We feel today that that is still needed. And I just wanted to point that out to you because today on a biennial basis there's about a $43 million unfunded need for improvements on airport runways around the state. And I don't know if there will be any discussion of this along the way. And some might call me stupid for offering this up as a discussion point when nobody's asking the question, but I just in the interest of telling kind of the background story, how this got here and why, I wanted to point that out to the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair, yes. Real quick, like on that, so that money comes from the highway funds that are generated by the fuel tax. Is that where that comes from? Or is it, I know it's S7. Just tell me where it comes from.
Mr. Chairman, the funding that comes to the Department of Transportation and mineral royalties and severance taxes, which are unrestricted, which are not impaired by the constitutional provision of using, like, gasoline taxes, you have to use that for construction and maintenance and traffic supervision. So we do use federal mineral royalties and severance taxes that the Department of Transportation receives to pay for that portion of the budget.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 22, continuing with airport improvements. And I mentioned just a second ago that the governor restored the cut that we proposed. And he did not take that. The Joint Transportation Military Affairs Committee, our oversight committee, during the interim suggested to the governor by letter that that they suggested restoring the funding to airport improvements and to air service enhancements, but taking that from the Surface Transportation Fund. The governor did restore those. He declined to take that from the Transportation Fund. So he held the Surface Transportation Fund harmless. And did restore the proposed cuts.
Mr. Co-Chair, yeah. You know, John, on these airport improvements, you know, and I know there's some federal, the FAA's got some regulations, but I don't know how many million dollars we spent at Riverton. I'm a pilot, and I can tell you that what they did there was totally unnecessary as far as being able to safely land an airplane. And so I hope when you're looking at these projects on these airports that you take into consideration some of the things they're doing with these funds. Just because it's 90-10, doesn't mean we need to run out there and spend money on airports. We really don't need to have the. And I think another one is Evanston, where you had a perfectly good airport, and they turned around and did a huge major expansion. I've landed at the other airport way before, and the one now, of course, is great. You can probably land a 747 on it, but nobody lands 747s in Evanston. So when we're doing that in the future and we're talking about these projects, I would hope that the YDOT would look at it from that perspective. And I know you've got the Aeronautics Commission out there, and they're pilots, and I think they could provide a lot of input. That's just an editorial comment. I guess now what I would say, do you agree?
Mr. Chairman, duly noted. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I am on page 24. This is the air service enhancement assistance. Airport improvements has to do with the improving the runways and associated properties on the airports. Air service enhancement is limited to the 10 commercial air service airports in the state. You all, I think, know its purpose. Again, the governor took the same action relative to the recommendation of the department and also the recommendation made by the Joint Transportation Military Affairs Committee.
Have you already, Director, have you already have these grants in place for, you say it's available to 10. I think it's been more available to like 3 or 4. But have you already got those grants committed for this next year or the biennium?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have Dennis Byrne respond to that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we have grants in place for Gillette, Rock Springs. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. We do have grants in place for Rock Springs, Gillette, Cody, and Jackson. Those are typically no longer than a year contracts from time to time. So we are committed for the year, but no further than that.
So this, Director, this cut then really, I mean, if this cut, if we went against the governor's rec, you haven't committed this money, or have you? You have committed it? You have not committed
it? We have not committed it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 26. And this is the overhead administrative budget for the Air Service Enhancement Program. And that cut was accepted by the governor. That brings me, Mr. Chairman, to page 28 and 20 and following. And that's the surface transportation request. On page 30, I think the governor addressed this issue with you when he presented his budget to you. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions, committee? I think Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could go back where your recommendation for cuts at 8% were 2.5, the governor's came in at 2. But you obviously think you can do it at 2.5 back on where we started on page 3.
Senator, I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Okay. Your cuts, your proposed cuts, you proposed 2.5, column 3.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Governor's came in less. His recommendation is less.
Yes, sir. That the governor's recommendation restored the proposed cuts. We went straight across the board on our general fund appropriations standard
right.
budgets. The governor's cuts restored the proposed cuts to air service enhancement and airport improvements, and that was the governor's take on that. It was also the recommendation of the Joint Transportation and Military Affairs Committee to do so.
But Mr. Chairman, you feel though that you could still live with those cuts? You proposed them in the beginning.
Mr. Chairman, yes. We, in proposing the cuts, we articulated what the anticipated cost of those cuts would be, the impact of those cuts would be. But strictly speaking, our instructions were clear, 8%, and our instructions by footnote in the budget bill were clear. So it made it a very straightforward exercise.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just maybe one other quick one. I travel the state's highways. You list them as 54% good to excellent. They all seem good, and there's other legislation underway that may bring you some more money, but you need about $134 million to bring them up beyond that, or at least maintain them at that. Is that other legislation going to work if that goes through, or can you get by with what you have now at about half of our highways at a good to excellent rating?
Mr. Chairman, boy, that gives me a lot of latitude in answering that question, I suppose. The $134.5 million needed to maintain the system in its present condition is a real figure that we've been using for a number of years now. The actual shortfall, if you subtract the current general fund appropriation of $25 million a year or the standard budget of $50 million, is about $109.5. The fuel tax will raise around $47 if that were to pass. There's a registration bill that hasn't been introduced yet. That was, I think, roughly another 18. So there would be significant progress made toward that. Could we live with that? We will be grateful for whatever we get. But the amount needed over the next 20 years to maintain the system in its current condition is a very real amount, and that's based on both our past experience and what we're experiencing now and the anticipated inflation.
Mr. Chairman, one other question. Seems like we kind of work wild link up and on all around it all the time, and we come back to the same question. In 2014, we're going to have to add more money to just keep it working, and is everybody using it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstader, I'm going to have Ken Schultz respond to that question. I don't know the total number of users at this point. I know that there's a tremendous number of agencies in the state and several federal agencies using the system now, but I think he can give you some specifics on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ken Schultz. I'm the Assistant Chief Engineer for Operations with WIDOT. Senator Dockstader, we as of Monday, we had 18 of 23 counties that have started using this for their daily operations. We have over 15,000 radios on the system currently. There are 267 agencies that have applied to the PSCC and have approval to use the system at this point in time. We do have some challenges that we're working on currently, and some other system towers that we're building. We've got two in the northwest corner of the state that we're negotiating heavily on to try and come up with solutions to provide some coverage in that part of the state. We've got currently, I think, seven portable coverage enhancement sites that we're building at various stages right now, and most of those should be complete by calendar 2013. And so that should be of some help. We are currently assessing coverage when we have questions raised by the users and working to solve those issues. Some of those issues are interference issues. Some of those issues are radio calibration issues. And, in fact, there have been a couple of instances where we have had some large interference issues and technical issues with placement of towers that have required some additional work and some additional build out.
Right. And the 014 update is to keep it all running, we've got to have it.
That's Mr. Chairman, that is true. I will tell you that this was part of a request when we made the biennium request. We requested another item in that, and that was an upgrade to the system, a big lift upgrade in the software version, the radio version from 7.2 to 7.11. That was denied during the budget session. The governor got some complaints because there were a number of local entities that could not get on the system at this point because they could not buy equipment that was compatible with the old version of the system. So the governor instructed our department and the Department of Homeland Security to try to shuffle some things around and see if we could find some money. And we did that, and there is a B11 for that was taken care of. That upgrade was completed in October of 2012. And a number of other agencies have been able to come on board since that and be able to buy some new equipment. This is what this is. I mean, it's one of those things. It's a computer system, and as we all know, technology seems to be evolving very quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just a quick question on WildLink then. So those five or six counties you said that are not involved, I can't remember the number you said.
Mr. Chairman, it was 18 of 23 right now that are using that.
Okay, so, and who are those other ones that aren't, and why aren't they? Is it some of this cost of equipment issues, or
there have been some cost of equipment issues? I don't have the list of counties with me, but I can certainly get that to you.
Do you know a couple of this off the top of your head? I mean,
honestly, I don't.
Okay,
I don't.
The next question I had, you know, with the fires this last summer and. How about federal guys? Are they communicating? I mean, I heard from constituents that the federal guys couldn't talk to the state guys, to the county guys, so I heard all this.
Mr. Chairman, the federal agencies are moving that direction. I think some of the federal agencies have actually, we have members of the federal agencies that are on the PSCC, and they participate. We have the FBI is on the system. The Forest Service in some areas is on the system. The BLM has been used. They've been a little slow to migrate, but they are coming across. This system, while it wasn't perfect in this last fire season, the state folks that I talked to with forestry and that, and the Homeland Security folks, their reports on it was much better than it would have been if we didn't have it.
Okay, good. And then, James, I'm done with Wildlink. Does anybody have anything else on Wildlink? I'll go Representative Burkhart and then Representative Moniz. Go ahead, Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One quick question on Wildlink. Is it safe to assume that from here on out we're going to have constant requests for upgrades?
Mr. Chairman, if we get this software upgrade agreement, and we've already got some other things that we're looking at for standard requests that have not been a standard in the past, but there will be some milestone points at which we will have to do some large lifts for certain pieces of hardware. But it's safe to say that we're working on that we are going to see a significant annual expenditure for this system. I mean, it just is going to be that.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Define significant, please.
Significant, what our records are indicating right now is we're looking at approximately $8 million a year for the ongoing operation and maintenance of the system without the capital expenditures that we would require to do some hardware upgrades on mountaintops and other areas.
Okay. Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said the FBI and the Forest Service and the BLM are using it and on it. Are those agencies contributing to the maintenance of it as well?
Mr. Chairman, at this point in time, no, they are not. This system for the users, for all users, is not costing any of them anything with the exception of DOT and then what the legislature provides.
Why are they not contributing?
Mr. Chairman, the short answer to that is there has been no subscription cost associated or levied on the Wildlink system.
Have you talked about that or discussed that or is one possible way? If you did that, I mean, everybody's quit using it or what?
Mr. Chairman, I think my personal perspective on it would be let's get the system completely built, completely lit up.
I'm all on it.
And we're close to that. I think there was a document passed out to you. That I know the secretary has it if you don't. But there's a three-pager there that shows a map of the system as complete or as the status today. Also some notes and projected cost on the back page. Again, my perspective is get the remainder of those core sites built out, get whatever we can done to fill in gaps in coverage, which can only be addressed after the core is lit up, and then let's talk about that. But it's a little tough for me to ask somebody to pay a subscription rate if I can't fill the dead spots in their county or if I don't have the system complete in their area yet.
Okay. Any other questions on Wildlink? Appreciate your work on it. I mean, it's been an interesting deal, and you've taken a lot of probably some deserved, some not so deserved rabbit punches on the deal, but that's part of it. So,
Mr. Chairman.
My next question is really about the Lust Penny now, and just kind of educate the committee a little bit, educate me. As I recall, it we roll that up to like $17 million, then we stopped diverting it. First of all, there's a swap with severance tax, I think, and then you maybe explain that. And then we spend down the Lust Penny to like the account to $11 million. It kicks back into the account, or if I recall. So maybe just and how much money if we didn't stop it and those kind of things per year.
Mr. Chairman, currently the leaking underground storage tax penny collects about $12 million a year. Under Wyoming's constitution that we talked about earlier, all highway user fees have to be spent for construction, maintenance, and traffic supervision. So that Lust Penny is given to the Department of Transportation, and we spend it under those rules, the constitution. However, a like amount of that money that we collect goes to the Department of Environmental Quality for leaking underground storage tax mitigation, leaking underground storage tank mitigation. There's two accounts. One's a financial responsibility account. I think it's got a threshold of $1 million, and there's another account. I believe the threshold, you're correct, Mr. Chairman, is about $17 million. The responsibility in statute is if that fund eclipses those thresholds, the director of the Department of Environmental Quality shall notify the director of Department of Transportation to turn that penny off. And then that penny turns back on when it gets back to the lower level of the threshold. One of the interesting things that did take place with the lush penny is what I just explained to you is absolutely exactly the way it was prior to de-earmarking. There was a little bit of a twist in de-earmarking. In de-earmarking, prior to de-earmarking, it was a one-to-one relationship of how much money was being collected from the leaky underground storage tax and then the offset to the Department of Environmental Quality from our oil and gas severance taxes. Through the earmarking process, the legislation was very complicated. Through a legislative action, they made the amount of money for the leak underground storage tax to be in a formula for how much the Department of Transportation would be offset after de-earmarking took place. Now, de-earmarking since then, $1.4 billion impact, that legislation of the Department of Transportation and total funds. So there's really not a one-to-one relationship anymore. It was addressed in the legislation for de-earmarking to take that money and never give it to WIDOT, just have it directly go to the Department of Environmental
Quality. I guess the question then is it's obviously turned off quite a bit then. How much of it do you give up in highway maintenance, really? I mean, a couple million a year?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's where I was headed with my conversation is that this penny has never been turned off to my knowledge.
Oh, really?
Never has been. But if it does, because there used to be a one-to-one relationship, prior to de-earmarking, the Department of Transportation would be held harmless. But now because we were taking our severance tax amount, rather than getting 6%, we get 4.33% in our severance taxes since the earmarking. So you turn the penny off. The Department of Environmental Quality doesn't get any money because the LUS isn't being collected. We don't collect the LUS, so we lose $12 million a year.
Yeah.
And that was just an unfortunate consequence through the whole de-earmarking process.
So you're not going to get the LUS penny no matter what happens.
That's a good...
Whether it's turned off or turned on.
If it turns off, we're going to get hurt.
Now, you said that one point, if it turns off, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, we're going to get stung by $12 million. That will sink our budget.
That's interesting. Okay. So you don't want it turned off?
Mr. Chairman, that would be accurate.
It's funny. We've got some ideas maybe to not turn it off. But on to you mentioned $1.5 billion since de-earmarking.
Yeah.
And we've made up, how much have we general fund? About $950 million in that time. So we've made up some of that, certainly, in general fund appropriations.
Mr. Chairman, that is true. In the interactive budget presentation, I hope you all received that.
Yeah,
Department of Transportation. There's actually a slide in there that represents the earmarking fairly well. $1.3 billion through 2014, we're estimating the last couple of years from the CREG. The appropriations since then for basically service transportation has been $562 million in general fund appropriations. Other appropriations that are not necessarily for WIDOT's assets are for $141 million for a total of $703 million for the general fund appropriations to the Department of Transportation's Cletus mission.
I thought it was $900, so it's $700, huh? Okay, good. And then any questions about that? I was just running down that. I needed some information. And then just talking about the handout you gave us, and it's handout number 195 with the bar graph on the front shows your budget.
Mr. Total Chairman, budget. That's our product.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. Well, do you have a copy of this?
Mr. Chairman, I have not seen that, but I'm aware of it.
I don't want to talk about it until you have a copy, this isn't a big fact-finding deal, but I want to get a few generalizations on it.
Mr. Chairman, I think I can generalize the relationship to our positions to our funding real quick.
You know, just looking at our, you can see the bar graph. I mean, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is the peak.
Right.
ARRA and general funds.
ARRA and general funds is that right there. So that's the difference.
Yep.
How much in ARRA funds did you
$157 million, $156.5 million is what the Department of Transportation received for surface transportation. There was some money for airports, and also I think that was $3 million that we actually rolled out on airports, and then also we got about $9 million for transit in ARRA.
Okay. And then the page two of that are the positions.
Yes, I believe that's how they're rolling it out.
And if you look at the commission positions that are in the center, I'm just looking at the numbers, and you can see it's the step down, the second graph there. It's 1620 in 03-04 to 1523 now. You know, 8 years later. Mm-hmm. Is that, do you see that? Are we looking?
Yes.
Does that kind of match up? And then just talk about that a little bit. What are those? I mean, you've had a lot of vacant positions over the years. You've paid overtime with and done some of those things, haven't you? Snowplow drivers. I don't know. Maybe explain to us a little bit where are some. These cuts aren't all in administration. I mean.
Okay. Let me try to take the
and
last.
And we've probably got about 5, 7, 8 minutes of conversation left.
Okay.
We'll have to turn you loose.
Okay.
So if there's anything else, too, we want to make sure
okay.
you need to tell us.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah. At this point, we're just in question answering
okay.
mode. So with regard to funding for positions, we have one generally funded position in the entire agency, and that's the Air Service Enhancement position. So the rest of them are commission funded.
Sure.
And the labor is paid in the position when the position is filled. In other words, if a position is not filled, if it's left vacant, and there are decisions made on the run all the time whether or not the position is needed to be filled. If a position is not filled within the agency when the vacancy exists, then that money stays in the highway fund. Okay, so it's available for construction projects and other needs within the agency. The change in numbers that you see from, I'm looking back at 2000 and, 3 and 4 at 1620 and all the way down to 1523 reflects the positions that were swept during the Freedenthal administration.
Okay.
And the total there was about 118 positions that were swept from the agency, a combination both of commission positions and legislative side positions. There were a few there as well.
Okay, and then go ahead.
Does that answer your question?
It does, and then so the money then from those positions gone into construction. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, Kevin's better at describing that, but yes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that would be accurate.
What's your current vacancy list then out of the, I mean, you have total positions then, you have about 2,000, what is that, 2,076, looks like. How many out of that 2,076 today are vacant?
Mr. Chairman, last year during the Joint Appropriation Committee, we provided you that list.
I know.
We'd have to go back and gen that up and get that to you.
But just on a daily kind of thing, do you have 100 vacancies? Do you have 50? Yeah. I mean, you don't have to give us today's exact number. But
Mr.
Generally,
Chairman, I think that would probably be a fair estimate, 100 or less. However, on a daily basis, that's a revolving sort of thing because positions are being advertised.
Sure.
And filled as, you know, as the days go
sure,
by.
Sure, it's a big agency. It's always mm-hmm. going to be turnover. Okay, and just and then so those funds then are not, I mean, we have kind of a, I guess in the commission side, in our 100 series, they can only be used for 100 series, and then they're swept back into the general fund. Now, these commission positions, or they're all funded, I guess, by transportation funds, you're... The funds that aren't used for those, what we call 100 series, then go to road construction and maintenance.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Okay. And I guess, you know, a thing in Wyoming's a little unique. I mean, small town, long streets. We've got lots of long streets. But the criticism is that you're top heavy. You got too many guys that are out of these 2,076 guys and not enough going to road maintenance. I mean, and our comparator states, I mean, the percentage of your budget going to road maintenance and construction you know, I've asked for that question, and I've looked at your stuff, and it's kind of hard to flesh that out. I mean, who do you compare yourselves to? Montana, North Dakota?
A good cross section to compare us to would probably be the Dakotas, Montana, Idaho. In terms of similar size, the highway side, actually, for the state patrol as well.
Yeah. And so, I mean, how do we match up with those folks, percentage of that commission budget that's going to construction?
Mr. Chairman, I can point out a couple of things that the Department of Transportation has recently researched. One of the things that we recently researched is our cost for engineering, our PE and our CE cost on a national level and also on a surrounding state level. With a couple of outlying states that apparently didn't report the information fairly, the Department of Transportation in Wyoming, we do better than they do. We do better than the national average, and we also do better than the surrounding states for how much percentage we spend on a contract administration.
Which includes personnel cost.
Which is absolutely.
Well, you know, I mean, and I'll just throw out some of these things so you kind of know what we hear anecdotally, but we've had a couple agencies come in, and Director Forsland Health, the big one out there, and then some others that have really kind of it's a focus on really how can we save some money. I mean, it's really a focus of leadership. Expenditure control budgeting is what Director Forsland talked about, but how do we, instead of spending $5,000 for a commission meeting, how can we save that $5,000, or how can we do it a little bit cheaper and save a little money? And so that's kind of the, you know, where I'm going with this, because the deal as well, the rumors are you take your engineer and he flies from Cheyenne somewhere into the state, and he works that day and flies back home. And so all that stuff's out there. Maybe talk about that a little bit. That drives your costs up.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of responses. One in the larger picture, and that is that this budget overview document that we just completed, and we're not going to go through, but it will help identify by the major programs anyway what the cost drivers are and what efficiencies that we've undertaken to cut costs, and those have been significant ones. Relative to aircraft use, our policy, and it's actually, I think there's a statement in that same booklet there, that overview. Relative to aircraft use, our strict policy inside the DOT is a need-only basis, and it has to be approved by supervision in order for somebody to use the plane. I myself use the plane fewer than five times a year. So regardless of what the rumors are saying, there are strict controls in place, and we are looking, it would be very accurate to say that we're looking in every corner for ways for us to save money.
And so back to that, so you spend a higher percentage of your budget, your commission budget, on construction and maintenance than those comparator states do.
I don't know if we could assert that, but my suspicion is that we do. I don't think that our overhead costs or our personnel costs are any higher than those surrounding agencies, and in some cases, particularly associated with engineering, the engineering costs are actually lower.
Yeah. Okay, now any other questions or... Representative Burkhardt, I think, and then Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to have a number of questions on WyoLink. The main one being the estimate is in the future you're going to need $8 million a year for this system. The current biennial budget is $4.2 million. They just don't seem to add up to me. It seems like there's going to be a lot of requests for a lot more money.
Do you have a... that? Any comment on that, or you respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, while Kenny's getting seated here, if you look at the back page at the projected cost of WyoLink.
Yeah, we got to get rolling here pretty soon. Okay. We're down to the final couple minutes.
Mr. Chairman, the Representative Brooker, you're exactly right. The numbers do not add up. I mean, we've... Again, there's only really one standard budget item in our current WyoLink budget, and that is the communications costs that go through. And so we've been returning to the Appropriations Committee, the legislature, to get funding for everything that we do outside the pieces that the Transportation Commission has provided to the system.
Mr. Chairman, one additional comment. Representative Burkhart, as you look at this chart, this is not meant to forecast what we're going to come and ask you for. There's some of this, some significant portions of this that are not YDOT's responsibility. This is just a total accounting of what we project the system and the user costs are going to be into the future.
Our best estimate. Director, how about, and Don, if we could, if you guys, would you mind coming back at 3 o'clock for about another 10, 15 minutes?
Absolutely.
Would that be okay?
We'd be happy to.
And then we'll just push miners back a few minutes and go from there. Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.